Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. But more importantly, we've got a new team that I am insanely excited about. We've got the one and only Nathan Marzion. You can find him on Twitter at Nathan Marzion, appropriately named. He, of course, is also on Behind the Bucks, big Milwaukee Bucks guy, but he is in our second year of covering the Packers for Pack-A-Day. So, Nathan, welcome back.
Thank you. I'm very, very excited to do some more content this year and another season of covering the Packers on here. So, yeah, as you said, I'm a big Bucks guy, but love the Packers as well. So it's always, you know, good to be doing some Packers stuff as well.
Some of the best after the game Packer highlight videos as well that you will find on the entire internet. So keep an eye out for those. And then, of course, Tyler D. Brook on Twitter. Tyler Brook, of course, he's an NFL analyst for the 33rd team. And of course, this is his, you've been on Pack-A-Day, I think, in a couple of our live chats, but this is your debut as like an actual Pack-A-Day member. So Tyler, welcome in.
I went over and left Acme Packing Company to cover the league as a whole, but like I can't stay away from the Packers. Nope. Like there's just no way. I don't know. You know, I have a group chat filled with Bears fans from back when I lived in Chicago. I've got a couple Packers friends, but like this is my outlet, man. How else am I going to talk about this team on a consistent basis?
We had to reel you back in. As soon as I'm like, you know what, he's getting a little too national, I'm like, you know what, we got to reel him right back in and get him talking Packers again. So this is going to be an epic group. I'm so excited to talk to you guys every couple of weeks about all things Green Bay Packers. Let's start, though, with not Packers. This was the opening Sunday in the NFL. We had a full slate of action. We are recording this prior to the Sunday night game, so we do not have Lions and Rams results as of yet. But Tyler, I will start with you. Just any sort of takeaways or anything that caught your eye on first day of Sunday NFL action?
Well, I just wrote in a piece for the 33rd team. They asked me to grade the rookie quarterbacks, and I guess you could say it wasn't an awesome start for those guys. I did like Jaden Daniels. I thought he threw really well with timing, and then obviously was just a phenomenal rusher today. But Caleb Williams was bad. And I know like scheme is part of that. There were a lot of really complicated screens that just weren't going well, protection issues, but like missed a couple deep shots that were wide open. There were a couple where he's throwing from a clean pocket on basically like a stick concept, which is like just a quick hitch, and he's missing on those. Like it was really erratic. And then he's trying to go off script, which is what he's known for. And like, let me tell you, let me preface right now, he will make those plays at the NFL level. But trying to do too much in his first game, ended up having two sacks for like 29 yards. Yeah. One of them was like a 19-yard sack that took them out of field goal position. They could not do a single thing on offense. My Bears friends are still puffing out their chests. They're top of the NFC North technically with that win. But it was just a really rocky debut. And I think it's just kind of that thing that, you know, at least Packers fans that are kind of Bears haters had been expecting all along, which is like, yeah, you made the number one pick and then you had all these splashy signings, but didn't really focus on that offensive line, and it really might start costing you pretty quick.
Yeah, very much so. I want to touch base on those rookie QBs in just a moment, but Nathan, what stood out to you?
One of the things that right away caught my eye was the Bengals just kind of sleepwalking through their game against the Patriots. And you kind of felt like, okay, at some point they'll get going and they'll probably, you know, get a win here still and just come away with an ugly win. But they gave that game away. They had the fumble at like the 1 yard line as the guy was about to score a touchdown. I don't remember which player it was. It was a tight end. Yep. And then they had the fumble on a punt return that got, you know, the Patriots got the ball in Bengals territory, had a short field. So yeah, they just kind of made all those little mistakes that you have to make in order to get upset like that. And, you know, maybe some of it too is that the Patriots will be a little bit better than maybe we think. And that defense is really good, but yeah, I was very surprised that, you know, and this is now a little bit of time where Joe Burrow has kind of struggled anytime he doesn't have both of his receivers. It feels like when he just has one of Jamar Chase or T. Higgins, he's just not nearly as good. That offense is not nearly as good. So it's just been kind of a weird little stretch here when you know, Higgins was hurt or Chase was hurt last year. Now Higgins is hurt and it's kind of really affected that offense. And yeah, I was surprised. They only put up 10 points and I don't think they had I don't think they scored in the first half, was it? I don't even remember. There was a while before they scored any points. So, yeah.
Yeah, it was a bizarre game from Cincinnati. I forget who it was, so my apologies for not being able to credit them. But I read somebody who covers the Bengals like right before the start of the season, and their bold prediction was like, they're like, the Bengals aren't going to make the playoffs. And I'm like, come on, this is like you not being able to see the forest through the trees or whatever. Like, clearly the Bengals are going to go and make the playoffs. And then you have that week one, obviously loss against the Patriots. They got the Chiefs next week now in KC. KC has, of course, the extra rest time as well. I think it's in KC. Don't quote me on that. But they have the Chiefs in the second week game. And that's obviously going to be a very difficult matchup. So that could be a rough start for the Bengals, potentially going 0-2. Back to the rookie quarterbacks really quick. Just before we started, I tweeted this out. The combined day for Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, and Bo Nix, 57 of 95, 60% completion percentage, 414 yards amongst three starting quarterbacks, total passing, zero touchdowns passing, two interceptions for a quarterback rating of 61.47. So to your point, Tyler, not exactly a great day at the office overall for the rookie quarterbacks. Like you said, I thought Jaden Daniels had some moments, but clearly that team was overmatched throughout the course of that game. Bo Nix had two picks, but it easily could have been five picks if there weren't a couple of dropped ones. Exactly. I'm sure. What were we going to say, Tyler?
No, just my favorite part of the two interceptions was on the second one. I can't remember what the announcer's name is. He's just yelling out, "Oh no!" His Bo Nix is throwing it, and it's too perfect of a moment.
It really was. I know exactly what you're talking about. You're like, you could see it like midair. You're like, "Oh no!" And then Reek Woolen, I think, was the one who picked that one off. But yeah, it was like in triple coverage. So just a rough day for the rookie QBs. Just a couple other things that stood out to me on day one: the Panthers were beyond awful. And I mean, we knew the Panthers are bad, so this is not like breaking news, but I was watching some of that game and it was like guys were running into each other, just brutal interceptions. I mean, I don't think any of us are necessarily, maybe we're just wrong, but I don't think any of us are necessarily expecting the Saints to be this like juggernaut team. And they look like indestructible against that Panthers team. That is a team that is going to lose a ton of games this year. And then kind of on the flip side, talk about a team that just finds ways every single time. Steelers 18-10 over the Falcons. And it's just like, I think a lot of people, myself included, were picking the Falcons for that game. The Falcons have this, you know, obviously Kirk Cousins, new offense, new weapons, new coach. And you're thinking, yeah, I think it's in Atlanta and, you know, they're going to get a win. Justin Fields is starting at QB. The Steelers, they six field goal you to death. Like they literally kick six field goals. Their kicker end up having to punt the ball. Justin Fields is out there just running and just, it didn't matter. They just found a way to win games. And that is just the Mike Tomlin era in a nutshell. It's just like, it doesn't matter who's at what positions or how you have to win the game. They just find ways to win. And it's just another classic Pittsburgh Steelers victory.
There were two things I took away from that. You mentioned the punter got hurt. Yeah. And so the kicker had to punt. The punter was also, I think, the long snapper. I think I heard
the holder, the holder.
The holder.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Just what a mess of an operation.
Yep.
And then just the second one, Kirk Cousins looked scared out there.
Yeah.
Like clean pockets throwing off his back foot. He's not throwing past the sticks. It was like, I don't know if he's not fully healthy yet or if that injury has just gotten in his head, but like that was not the Kirk Cousins I remember.
And which performance you think was more pathetic? Was it Panthers or was it the Giants losing 28-6 at home to the Vikings and Sam Darnold?
Panthers. Go ahead, Tyler.
Bad, man. There are some real stinkers today.
Yeah.
Daniel Jones is... It is not. It's been a while. You know, we've been saying this for a while, but it's just, he is not the guy. He is not gonna. I mean, I feel like people kind of just have made up reasons to believe in him and just think, okay, it's the offensive line's fault, and I think he can get back to a decent level. And it's we see time and time again, it's not happening. And yeah, I mean, I think today was kind of the nail in the coffin a little bit. He's gonna have a very short leash, and another guy too that might have a very short leash that was very bad today was Deshaun Watson. He's kind of in a make or break type of situation this year with Cleveland, and it was not good against the Cowboys today. I know they were down like 27-3, and it was not good.
The Browns are going to wish it was a make or break situation. They just redid his contract again. Yeah. That thing is guaranteed for the next couple of years at least. Like, that is a absolute nightmare of a situation in Cleveland with Deshaun Watson, and there was some poor quarterback play. I don't know how the Giants end up out of that draft with all the quarterbacks in that draft with no QB. Like, that is inexcusable at this point, how they don't give themselves an out. Drew Lock is the only guy they go get in the offseason. Like, that is just, you know, that's just bad management. We all like Malik Nabers. He's going to be a stud in this league, but it doesn't really matter if he doesn't have somebody throwing him football. So yeah, the Daniel Jones experience got off to a very Daniel Jones experience start in week one. Let's move on from week one. Let's transition a little bit to Green Bay. The news today was a couple things. So let's start with the Malik Willis news. I don't think shocking to anyone, but it was reported, I believe it was Jay Glazer that had it initially, that Malik Willis will be the starter for Green Bay in week two, which I think confirms a couple things. One, Jordan will not play this week, which again, I don't think is a surprise to anyone. I think some people were maybe holding out a little bit of hope of like, can you brace that thing up and, you know, and do whatever you need to do. That's just not going to happen. Malik's going to be the starter. And then the second thing is that, you know, maybe some were thinking, well, Malik doesn't know the playbook yet, so maybe it's going to be Sean Clifford that's the starter, but it is Malik Willis. Nathan, I'll start with you. Thoughts on Malik Willis being named the starter for week two?
Yeah, I mean, not very surprising. I think when you compare him and Sean Clifford, I know Sean Clifford knows the playbook, has a little bit more experience, but we've, I think, seen enough of Sean Clifford to know that he's probably not the option at quarterback and should still remain the backup to Malik Willis. Whereas I know Malik Willis has not been here long. We haven't seen much from him, but I'm definitely more comfortable, you know, handing the keys over to him for a few weeks than I would be Sean Clifford at any time. So, you know, not surprising. I'm glad that it is Malik Willis. I know they talked about potentially, you know, talking to veteran guys and Ryan Tannehill and stuff like that, which, you know, again, I wouldn't have minded, but I mean, for what they have, Malik Willis to me is the clear choice.
Tyler?
After seeing what Will Levis did, which could be considered an act of terrorism today, and then realizing that Malik Willis did not win the starting job over Will Levis.
Or the backup job. He was the number three.
I guess you could say I'm a little bit worried. That being said, like, I remember scouting him at Liberty and he could move and he had an absolute howitzer. So can you just simplify the offense enough to just be like, listen, like, not going to reinvent the wheel here. We're going to run the ball. We might throw some zone read at you and we might have some play action deep shots or some really easy short game concepts. Don't think too much. Just go out there and play. And then if you can win one or two games, great. If we lose them all, things are pretty bad from then on, but I'm interested just from the talent perspective. I wouldn't say I'm optimistic.
I think that's a fair assessment. Yep. I think the word I would use is I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued to see what Matt LaFleur can do with Malik Willis. I'm intrigued to see how much of this offense he knows going into his second week with the team. Obviously that's not ideal. I think you bring up a great point of like, can he just go out there and play and not have to think so much? That's tough when, again, you're learning a new offense. But I do think we'll see some read option. I think you're going to see a lot of throws at or behind the line of scrimmage. You know, Green Bay has those plays in their playbook, a lot of them where they'll do the, you know, two wide receivers with a you know, wide receiver going out wide where you have the you're basically, you know, run pass optioning where you can either hand it to the guy inside or throw a little bubble on the outside. And they've had a lot of success with that type of play. And I think we're going to see a lot of that. We're going to see a lot of Josh Jacobs, Emmanuel Wilson. We'll see where Marshawn Lloyd is at this week. But we'll talk a little bit more of how you game plan for this game. But as far as him being the starter, I think this was the obvious choice. He gives you the most electric ability with the ball in his hands and maybe being able to do some things that can pick you up some first downs, even if it doesn't go right. I think of Josh Dobbs a little bit last year in that week, the start for Minnesota where they traded him midweek, got him in there. I don't think he started. I think it was Jaren Hall maybe who started and then he got hurt right away. So Dobbs had to go in and then he just kind of ran around for his life and made a bunch of plays. And, you know, sometimes that is, you know, can get the job done. I'll put it that way. So I think intriguing is the word for me. I want to go back to Ryan Tannehill for a moment because there were competing reports on the day. So Diana Rossini started off by saying that the Packers had reached out to Ryan Tannehill, maybe just like a casual conversation. She wasn't like reporting that this was like serious talks between the two or anything, but that there at least had been some form of a conversation. And then Tom Pelissero came out later and said, this was his tweet, the Packers have not reached out and are not expected to pursue any veteran quarterbacks, including Ryan Tannehill. The team expects Jordan Love back on the sooner end of the initial 3 to 6 week timeline and are focusing on preparing Malik Willis and Sean Clifford. So per Diana Rossini, maybe some casual conversation. Per Tom Pelissero, no conversation and no intentions of a conversation. I think regardless of who's right or who's wrong, I don't really care. It always felt like Ryan Tannehill in this situation for 3 weeks just to be the backup after that, when you just traded for Malik Willis, when Tannehill wouldn't know the offense now. It felt like something that probably would not happen, but per Pelissero, that does seem to be the case. Week one is officially in the books, and while it didn't maybe go the way many of us were hoping, it was still great to have football back in our lives. Now, we're on to week two, and there is still plenty of winning to be done, especially with Prize Picks. Right now, one Caleb Williams passing yard gets you one win on Prize Picks every week in September. That's right, only 1 yard gets you an automatic win every football weekend in September. And trust me, you are not going to want to miss this deal on Prize Picks. What I love about Prize Picks is that you can win 100 times your money with as little as 4 correct picks. And Prize Picks is the only real money daily fantasy platform with an injury insurance policy, so that your lineups stay in play even if one of your players gets injured. If your player leaves in the first half and doesn't return, your picks are still live. So obviously, I'll be going with Caleb Williams again in week two, but I have an oddly confident feeling about Malik Willis as well, especially when it comes to rushing yards. Whoever you choose, the best part is that you can download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY for a first deposit match up to $100. That's code PACKADAY on Prize Picks for a deposit match up to $100. So what are you waiting for? Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Hey friends, most people don't tell you that one of the hardest parts of becoming an adult is trying to actually kickstart your credit. Young adults get set up with credit cards so early, and so many people immediately start to accumulate debt as they begin their college careers. I know that's exactly what happened to me, and this is why I wish Kickoff was around when I was in credit trouble. I absolutely love Kickoff because of its simplicity and its results. Here's how simple it is. You make one-time payments, credit bureaus see your good behavior, and your credit grows. And as for those results, users with credit under 600 increase their credit by an average of 30 points in the first month. And what's even better, there's no credit check and you can cancel at any time. Kickoff is the number one credit building app out there and has over 100,000 positive reviews on the App Store. So join over a million people building credit with a Kickoff credit account today. Get your first month for a dollar. That's 80% off the normal price when you go to getkickoff.com/packaday today. That's Kickoff without the C. Get KIKOFF.com/packaday. Must sign up via getkickoff.com/packaday to activate offer. Offer applies to new Kickoff customers first month only, subject to approval. Average impact of 30-point increase in first month based on Equifax VantageScore 3.0 changes for Kickoff premium customers with starting credit below 600 who made their first on-time payment between January 2021 and March 2024. Payment and credit activity outside Kickoff can have an impact on your credit. Terms and conditions may apply. Offer subject to change. Individual results may vary.
Yeah, and I mean, Tannehill is obviously intriguing just in the sense that, okay, we saw him be a competent quarterback for so long in the NFL. That's something you can't say about Malik Willis or Sean Clifford. And so you're like, okay, if you're putting someone out there for 4 weeks hoping they can go 1-3, 2-2, I probably trust Ryan Tannehill to do that a little bit more than those guys. You know, again, we just haven't seen it from them. But as you said, there's also the other side of, okay, well, you know, he's older, he's coming off of, you know, the last time he played was he threw 4 touchdowns and 7 picks in 8 games in 2023. And so it's not like I don't trust that he's going to be just this, you know, perfect backup quarterback for us. And yeah, he wouldn't know the offense at all. You just signed Malik Willis. Like, I think they kind of are looking at this like, hey, we signed this guy for a reason, for this exact scenario of if Love goes down, like, where do we sign him to be our backup? And they're just going to, I think, roll with that. And it makes sense. Tannehill makes sense as well for obvious reasons, but they could see it going either way.
Yeah, I had seen some people being like, there's a LaFleur Tannehill connection because of the Titans. They were not in Tennessee at the same time as each other. And at the same point, like, again, you're thinking about, I think they are expecting 3 games without Jordan Love.
Yeah.
And at this point, how long has Malik Willis been there? Two, 3 weeks?
Yep, 2 weeks-ish.
He's got a little bit of a handle on the offense. NFL playbooks are ridiculous. And if Tannehill has no prior experience to a LaFleur offense, and then you sign him, like, let's just say tomorrow, all of a sudden he's got how many days to, you know, six days to prep for a game. And then by the time he might finally have a handle on it, Jordan Love is back. Just see what you've got with Willis. It's not going to be great. There are no good options in this scenario.
Yeah.
I think What is the saying about, I think it was Bill Polian about Peyton Manning. I'm not going to say it.
You're effed. You're effed. Yeah. We don't practice effed.
That's exactly how I feel here. You can't practice it. It's not going to be pretty, but if you want the best chance to win, take the guy that at least has a couple weeks with the playbook under his belt versus a guy that has to come in last minute.
Let's talk about this really quick, because I know some people online are upset and think that it's incompetence by Goody and the franchise to be in this situation of how can you not have a more competent backup quarterback ready to go? And now you're in this situation where if it is like 5 weeks and you could potentially go 1-5, like the season might potentially be on the line over these next 5 weeks. And you're going with a quarterback who just got here 2 weeks ago, who has not been proven in the NFL, who is more upside than actual, you know, realized potential at this point. Is this a mistake by Green Bay, or is this just the understandable situation of whether it's the Bill Polian, what we just talked about, or just the NFL where it is very, like, we just talked about the rookie QBs, Daniel Jones, and a bunch of starting quarterbacks who had really awful days, Deshaun Watson, et cetera. It's hard to find starting QBs, much less backup QBs. Nathan, I'll start with you. Where do you kind of come down on this situation?
Yeah, you don't build a team and prepare for your starting quarterback to get hurt. Like, that's not how you look at the season, look at your roster. Is okay, well, what if Jordan Love got hurt, would we be in a good situation? Because the reality is, if your starting quarterback, franchise quarterback, goes out for a quarter, a third of the season, it's going to be ugly. It's not going to be great. And you kind of accept that. You hope to just weather the storm. You hope to just kind of pick up a couple wins here and move on. But you don't build your team thinking about that. This is more of just like an emergency scenario. And the Bucks kind of have this same thing as well, where guys get hurt and then it's like, well, you know, Giannis misses the playoff series and they don't look as good. And it's, well, we should have had better backups. We should have had a better bench. And it's like, well, you don't build a team around, you know, thinking, what if Giannis gets hurt, or what if Chris Middleton is hurt? It's like you trust that those guys will be healthy. You build a team to be the best, you know, have the best potential and be the best, but you're not building it to like thinking about, okay, well, if this goes wrong and this goes wrong, are we going to be okay? It's that's just not how you prepare.
Pacers won that series fair and square. Oh, sorry.
I mean, I'm just saying, like, all I know is Bucks fans get very.
You can't replace Giannis. Irrational. It's an impossible task. Yeah. It's impossible. And again, yeah. I am a diehard Pacers fan. Love the Bucks. I think that's a great analogy, though. There's no scenario in which you can properly prepare for it. People want to point to Nick Foles winning a Super Bowl with the Eagles. Yeah. More often than not, you're getting Ian Book on the Saints or Brett Rippin on the Rams. Like, it's just not a good situation. You just have to live with it. Find a guy with some kind of flashes of potential and then cross your fingers. I think that's honestly the best strategy you can hope for in a situation like this.
The one caveat I would put on this is they did have a potential option. And I'm not, again, this is not saying that anyone would have felt like insanely confident of like, yep, now they're going to go 4-0 in these next four games or something. But there were two quarterbacks traded at the end of the cutdown times, Malik Willis for a 7th and Taylor Heinicke for a 6th. And this is kind of the perfect Taylor Heinicke situation, to be kind of honest. Maybe Malik Willis will play better than Taylor Heinicke. That could easily go out and happen. That's within the realm of possibility. You know, but just kind of the idea to me of, if I had to go into these next four games with Malik Willis, who's a little bit more unproven, or a 31-year-old Taylor Heinicke who started a bunch of games in this league in these exact sort of situations, is just a little bit of a gamer, can probably pick up maybe a playbook a little bit quicker. And Taylor Heinicke is on a one-year, $1.2 million deal, so it's not like he's on some $5, $6, $7 million contract. That would be the one thing where maybe with the benefit of hindsight a little bit, and it's tough to know exactly what backup quarterback situation you're going to get yourself into through the course of the year. But if they were really looking for a backup to maybe be that stopgap for a few weeks, maybe Taylor Heinicke could have been a little bit better version of that right now. Like I said, if it's me, I probably take Heinicke, but is it something that I'm losing sleep over that I feel, oh my goodness, Taylor Heinicke is so much better than Malik Willis? No, I don't. But that would be the only one to me of like, maybe they could have had an opportunity to do that instead and maybe would have been slightly in a better position, but I can't even guarantee that.
Gutekunst is too addicted to draft picks. There's no way you give up a 6th instead of a 7th.
Yeah, that's like asking for like any other team for like 3 first round picks. It's like, I'm not giving up a 6th. A 7th maybe, and you know he's still losing sleep over it.
100%.
And as you said, it's such a marginal, like, he might be a little bit better. I might be a little bit more confident. It's not some obvious, like, how in the world did you not get to the Heineken set?
A million percent.
It's yeah. You're just, I mean, at this point, like we said, you're in a pretty bad situation regardless. You're going to try to get through it as best you can, but you don't prepare for something like this. It's just something that you have to kind of deal with as it comes up. And so it's unfortunate, but yeah, this is just kind of the situation that we're in.
All right. So let's move on to kind of our main topic now that we're 21 minutes into talking about a bunch of other fun stuff already. But I kind of wanted to just ask you guys what your biggest surprises and disappointments were from week one. And obviously we can go Jordan Love's injury, losing the game, a billion mistakes throughout the course of the game. But if you had to kind of narrow it down, and you guys can go in any direction you want, I'm not going to limit you. It can be Jordan Love if you want. But Nathan, I'll start with you. We'll start with surprises. What was maybe a big surprise that came out of this week one game that maybe you didn't see coming?
Yeah, one of the guys that surprised me the most in a positive way was Emmanuel Wilson. He had the great second quarter drive where he ripped off a few nice runs in a row. I think he ended the game with like 4 for 46. And so, yeah, he had several nice runs, a couple over 10 yards. He had a catch for a first down, I think, in the fourth quarter. And, yeah, he definitely just looked productive. Like, he looked like, okay, this I had not, you know, I didn't expect him to be as good as he was. And I know it was kind of a stark contrast from what we saw from Jacobs to begin the game, where Jacobs was really struggling to get anything going. It seemed like he was getting stuffed play after play. And then Emmanuel Wilson comes in and is ripping off, you know, 15 yard runs. So it was definitely kind of like an eye opening, you know, drive where it was like, whoa, like Emmanuel Wilson is kind of making his stamp on this game. So that was definitely something that kind of jumped off the TV screen to me a little bit in the second quarter.
I think when you get to some of those players where, like, yeah, they've had some good preseason performances, but you kind of have in the back of your head is like, yeah, it's preseason. Is that really going to carry over into the regular season? And like, even some of the carries he got last year, there wasn't anything there. It was like, all right, is this just kind of a preseason guy? And then he goes out in week one, gets those opportunities and just runs insanely hard, finds holes, gets north and south, super easy, not too much dancing, looks really smooth doing it. And you're like, okay, yeah, I can see it now. And I think that's just going to get him more and more opportunities in this offense. I think it's a really good one. And I think he was one of the more pleasant surprises in this game. Tyler, what about you?
Not Jaden Reed, because I've been banging the table about that guy since he was at Michigan State. I'm going to go Tucker Kraft being tight end one. Very pleasant surprise. I'm super stoked about this. He played 64 snaps where Luke Musgrave only played 17. I did a lot of offseason work just literally watching film about Tucker Kraft because I was fascinated by him. Quietly one of the best blocking move tight ends out there. Like, he was phenomenal last year. I don't think he had his best blocking game in week one, but I think that combined with his after the catch ability as a receiver just makes him this really versatile chess piece. So very pleasantly surprised that, like, not only are they like leaning on him, but it is very clearly established that he is tight end one, even though he was dealing with that back injury heading into the week. So just relieved to see it, because it's just kind of what the eye test was seeing on film. Like, I thought that guy was a phenomenal talent. He needed to see the field more. Clearly the offensive staff feels the same way. So I think long term, very excited to see what he can do.
It's funny because this is one that I've been talking about for a while, going back the second half of last year, where Tucker Kraft came
in.
Such a beast, big time. And then saw it again in camp once he got out there. And I every time I did a depth chart, I would put Tucker Kraft one and Musgrave two. And people would ask me about it. I'm like, just wait, Tucker Kraft's going to be one. We know Matt LaFleur. We know if you need to be a blocker in this offense to be kind of heavily involved. And I think Musgrave's a really good effort blocker, but he's not going to be the level that Tucker Kraft is. And so it just always felt that way. But all of that being said, I had this on my surprises as well, not because Tucker Kraft was tight end one, but because 17 snaps was it, like you said, for Musgrave? Mm-hmm. So few snaps for Musgrave. And only one snap, which was on the 2-point conversion for Ben Sims. I thought this was going to be a very much a lot of two tight end sets. I thought we would see, you know, maybe 45 snaps for Kraft, but like 35 to 40 still for Luke Musgrave, and then like another 10 to 12 for Ben Sims. This was just a Tucker Kraft fest. Yep. And then it was a little bit of Musgrave and almost no Ben Sims. So that was still definitely something that was surprising. And then I'll add on one other one. Evan Williams not playing a single snap on defense in this one after a monster training camp. I thought for sure we were going to get at least a little bit of Bullard in the slot with Evan Williams at safety, or even just maybe, you know, not putting a full game plan on Javon Bullard's plate from day one of like, maybe do get again, 15 to 20 snaps for Williams, just like we saw 15 to 20 snaps for Jordan Morgan, just like we saw 11 snaps for Edgerrin Cooper. I thought he would get worked in some capacity. So him having a goose egg for snaps was a little bit surprising for me as well.
I wanted to highlight another one as well. Edgerrin Cooper only played 11 snaps, but I really liked what I saw out of him in limited action. My catchphrase for him the entire pre-draft process was "that boy fast," and boy, is that boy fast. I think there was one they tried to throw a now screen, and he just read it so well. He just, the downhill explosiveness to break it up was just incredible. Then I think he got in there for at least another tackle. But like again, really small sample size, but that's kind of what I was hoping to see from him. And I am a bit surprised that we saw that quickly, considering that he missed a pretty big chunk. What was his injury issue? Hamstring, hip? I can't remember.
It was one of the two. I forget. It was either a hamstring or a hip, and I can't remember.
It all blends together at some point. But I'm very encouraged by that. I think rookies are going to take lumps, but you know, long term, I imagine he'll eventually become a starter alongside Quay. Did really also like Bullard. That safety duo is so exciting.
Yeah. I was going to mention Bullard, you know, leading the team or being a co-leader in tackles for the team in your first career game is not easy to do. So definitely was impressed with him and, you know, just getting to the ball and kind of being around the ball very often. And I think, too, just speaking on that a little bit, the turnovers were a positive sign because I feel like last season, I think they only had 18 turnovers all of last season. Being able to force three in the first game, I thought, you know, McKinney's interception was an awesome, like, ball hawking, you know, something that we just have not seen a ton from the Packers defense in recent years. I know the one was kind of just a fumbled snap, so it wasn't as much the Packers forcing it, but at least being able to force a few turnovers was a nice, you know, a nice change from what we're kind of been used to with the Packers. Those were a couple more things I just wanted to mention.
Beautiful. Love it. All right. Let's talk about some of the more disappointing aspects, which are there, unfortunately, were, I think, a few more of coming out of this game. Tyler, I'll start with you this time. What was maybe something that you went back and thought was maybe a little bit more disappointing than you were expecting?
There's a few. I'll say it. Dontavian Wicks, just so bummed. Like, even when he was getting open, he just couldn't catch the ball. And I know one of them was like a slip, but, you know, keep your eyes up still. Imagine still in the position to make that catch. I know that body language was a big issue for him last year. I remember that clip of Aaron Jones trying to tell him to keep his head up. But you wonder with something like this, is his confidence going to be shot if that was an issue last year? Or is this like a really great opportunity to grow from? I'm just going to blame the field so I can cope with it, because I think Dontavian Wicks is another guy I banged the table for pre-draft. So I'm just going to hope for that.
He's too good. He's too good. This is not going to be a defining moment for him. I would love Green Bay. Oh, I guess it's a little bit different now with Malik Willis, but I was going to say, I would love just to scheme something up for Wicks on the first play of the game. Just again, get that confidence going a little bit, get him a catch and get that going in the right direction. But he's going to be totally fine. He's too talented of a player, but definitely a disappointing first game performance for him. Nathan, what about you?
Yeah, and the other one that's kind of, you know, like you said with Wicks, it's kind of one of those where you're like, okay, I guess I got to talk about it. It's kind of one of the elephants in the room. Jair was definitely very disappointing and very noticeably disappointing, allowing the huge touchdown to A.J. Brown, and had several moments where he was, you know, slipping out there and missing a couple tackles and just did not look like the elite Jair that we have been accustomed to up until, you know, recently. And I'm definitely a little bit concerned. I mean, this is now a little bit of time where he hasn't been his consistent elite self. And it's something that if we're not able to get that Jair anymore, it's, you know, what do you kind of hang your hat on as a defense at this point? Because, you know, the run stopping is not going to be there. In my opinion, you know, the linebacking play is not great. And I think that one of the things you're kind of usually reliant on with this defense is, okay, at least we have a guy that can shut down opposing team's top receivers and make a pretty big impact in the passing game. If we don't have that guy, you know, I like our DB room. I think our DBs are fine. Not having that bona fide, you know, star corner and lockdown corner consistently is something that I think definitely will have a negative effect, big negative effect on this defense if he doesn't get back to the level that we're used to. Because again, I mean, this has been a little bit of time now where he's just been good and not great. And, you know, again, on Friday, he wasn't even good. So it's a little bit concerning for me.
even when he had the interception, he was like, all right, it's Jair time.
And why would you? Yeah. I'm like, just go down. Okay. He's going to go. Nope. Why is he running it out? And yeah, almost fumbled. Like, guy comes from behind and hits him. I was like, I was upset.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had that on my list as well. You know, obviously came up with some big plays, had a couple pass breakups. I did like, there was an early play where he came up and made a physical tackle, which is not always his MO. And that's been a little bit more of an issue for him. Obviously did have the interception. There were some positives in this one, but man, the play against AJ Brown is just such a lazy coverage play. And it's not moving your feet. It's not staying back. It's leaving yourself susceptible to something like that. And wide receivers are too good in this league. And especially when you're going against somebody like AJ Brown, you have to be on top of your game, making sure that you are ready at all times for anything that can be thrown at you. And I don't know if he was expecting something different for coverage over the top. It's tough to imagine because there's one single high safety and just thinking that he's going to be able to get there to cover you. And if he beats you and just kind of sinking underneath, it was just a weird play all the way around from Jair. And it's just that sort of the thing. And listen, if you're going to be the boisterous one, if you're going to be the talker, if you're going to be the, you know, that guy that's trying to get under people's skin, you got to be able to go and back it up. And to Tyler, your point too, or maybe it was Nathan, I'm sorry. You know, this defense, if you don't have that guy that can go and lock up a wide receiver, I'm not saying he has to go and lock up the team's number one wide receiver, but you at least want to put him out there and feel like you've got a really good matchup from a coverage standpoint so that you can kind of get everything else you need to get done and maybe help some of the other corners. If you don't have that with Jair, and those are the things that are going to be a problem, like that is a big issue for this defense. And I'm willing to give it the benefit of the doubt. I thought he had a phenomenal training camp. I thought he looked fantastic. He was absolutely locked down through the vast majority of training camp. I thought he was, like, you could tell he was in the right headspace with everything. It was phenomenal. So I'm hoping maybe it was just field conditions or just an off night or whatever, but it's not obviously the start to the year that you wanted for Jair. And it just needs to be better than that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I want to mention the field conditions and that it, I'm not going to sit here and act like this is who Jair is now just because of this game. You know, this, they're definitely, the field conditions played a big part in it. Again, we saw him slipping around several times. It affected him on several different plays, which we're just, you know, we're not used to seeing. And so it's definitely something to be taken into account. And yeah, I mean, I'm not expecting Jair to, you know, you're going up against two great receivers, AJ Brown, Devontae Smith. Like, we know those guys are going to put up some numbers and they're going to have some catches. They're going to make an impact on the game, but yeah, prime Jair, we're used to him, you know, holding guys in check at least and not letting, you know, we're not used to him letting up or giving up an 80 yard touchdown to AJ Brown and really getting burnt the way he did. And as you said, making a completely lazy defensive effort like he did. So, but yeah, I'm still like fairly confident Jair is going to be okay. It's just a matter of, is he going to be close to that prime level that we're used to seeing? Because again, I mean, I think that makes a big difference if he's, you know, 90% of prime Jair or if he's 60% of prime Jair. It's going to make a big difference.
Agreed. One other one I had, and then I'll let you guys have any other ones as well. This is another one where I want to be crystal clear. I think field conditions very much played a part. I actually think maybe the cramping played a little bit of a part as well, but I was hoping to see a little bit more consistent mechanics from Jordan Love. And a lot of fadeaway stuff, a lot of, you know, throwing off the back foot, a lot of just not consistently planting and throwing. And like I said, I do think in this one, the field condition, because there was one earlier where he went to plant and kind of slipped a little bit and it just didn't feel like he trusted it. And he's almost like, that was the one where he almost threw the pick six to N'Kobe Dean, where he slipped. And I think he almost like panicked because I thought he was going to go down. So he just whips it out to Jacobs. And again, it should have been a pick six the other way. And I think almost maybe it got in his head where he's like, all right, I'm not doing that again. I'm just going to use my arm to do everything rather than like feel like I have to plant perfectly. So that easily could play a huge part in this. And I'm either way, he's a talented enough quarterback, but with Aaron, a lot of times, especially towards the end of the career, what I kind of talked about is like, can you let the ad lib back, you know, shoulder, sorry, the leaning back, the fadeaway stuff, the off platform stuff, do that when it's necessary, when you absolutely have to. That's a great club to have in your bag, but that shouldn't be your primary driver, your primary putter. That's the one that you pull out every once in a great while when you're in a weird sand trap that, you know, you're like, oh yeah, I've got this club that I can use in this random situation, but you don't want to be using it. It shouldn't be your primary club. So I just wanted to see a little bit more consistent mechanics from him in this game. I'm willing to give it the benefit of the doubt. It's not a, you know, precursor of, oh my goodness, he's not going to be good or anything like that. Just wanted a little bit more of that cleaned up, and let's just see what it kind of looks like when he gets back from the injury, which also may affect his mechanics a bit because he's probably not going to be 100% when he gets back. So we'll have to kind of keep an eye on that as well.
I've got another disappointment, but it's not really a player as much as it's a unit. The Packers really struggled getting home with four. Yeah. And there's three caveats there. The field, Eagles offensive line is good. And also schematically, are you just trying to contain Jalen Hurts?
Yep.
But there were situations where I think very clearly they're not trying to contain him, and they're just not able to get home. I know Gary had a phenomenal sack, but it was kind of on a play where they thought they had gotten an encroachment or offsides penalty, which they probably should have. But it's concerning, especially because I think with the way schematically this defense is built, and it's a lot of forceful downhill attacking defensive backs and all that, you need a consistent pass rush. And if you can't get home with four and have to add rushers, that adds a bit more risk and variance in pass coverages. And it just makes me a little bit nervous.
Totally. I was going to bring that up as well. Just, you know, not getting much pressure. Not really. They really just did not win in the trenches on that end. And I know, like, Clark, Enagbare, Brooks, Slayton all had terrible defensive PFF grades, run defense PFF grades, particularly against the run. And yeah, it just, they really struggled. And, you know, and as you said, when you're not able to get home with four, when you're not able to get pressure, it kind of affects your entire defense. And it's something that's going to have to hopefully be cleaned up. And when you're not getting pressure and then you're also not stopping the run, it's a pretty bad combination. And Saquon had, you know, 24 for 110 and two touchdowns on the ground, not to mention some more through the air. So yeah, as you said, plenty of caveats and plenty of things you could point to and say, okay, you know, it might not be indicative of how they're going to be the rest of the season. As a whole for this game, like midway through the game, you're kind of like, I'm not going to try to take too much away from this one game, just seeing the field conditions, seeing how the game was being played, all the penalties, which we haven't even mentioned yet. Like, there was just a lot in this game that was kind of just weird, and a lot that was kind of like, I'm not going to throw away this game, but it's just, it's a weird game. Let's try to hopefully get out with a win, but I'm not going to freak out too much about this stuff until we start seeing it a little bit more consistently.
Yeah, totally agree. We're all on the same page on that one. Definitely things that need to get cleaned up, and hopefully they do it. And they're going to need to, specifically on the defensive side of the ball. Just going back to that really quick, Tyler, it was interesting where Matt LaFleur in his post-game presser said, he was expecting that the defensive line was going to be able to get after the quarterback more, and he was kind of disappointed in the pass rush. But then Kenny Clark was asked about it. And what I saw too is it looked like they were playing contain a lot. And Clark was asked about it. He's like, yeah, we were doing a lot of contain, basically saying that we want Jalen Hurts to beat us with his arm rather than beat us with his legs. And they did that. He didn't run barely at all. Like, his rushing numbers were nothing. He did beat him with his arm, and they didn't get any pressure on him when there were some of those opportunities. So I don't know if it was just a difference in what maybe Matt was hoping for from an aggressive standpoint and how Halfley called it. There could still be some, you know, wires that aren't completely, you know, firing yet for a new defensive coordinator with the head coach and exactly what he wants. But that was an interesting, like, sort of juxtaposition of it seemed like Matt wanted more pressure and, you know, the defensive line to get some of that, but it very much felt, and Kenny echoed the fact that they were definitely doing a lot more contain in this game. So just interesting.
Maybe that's just a communication issue between LaFleur and Halfley, especially it's a new staff. LaFleur's probably more focused on the offense anyway, where Halfley has a specific game plan. It'd be a little surprising if he's not totally aware of that game plan on game day. But that is very interesting. Admittedly with the national coverage stuff, I don't have the time to watch the press conferences anymore. So thank you for that note. I think that was helpful for just me personally.
Yeah, no, you're good. Yeah. All right, really quick before we get out of here, just one kind of quick thought on how you would like to see Green Bay attack this game against the Colts now that we know Malik Willis will be the starter. Nathan, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to have to be a lot of Josh Jacobs and a lot of leaning on the run game, which, I mean, obviously when you lose your starting quarterback, you're going to have to go to the run game a little bit more. And as you said, when they do go to the pass, it's going to might likely be a lot of short stuff, a lot of just get the ball out quick, get it into the hands of your receivers and hope they can make some plays. But it's going to, like I said, it's probably going to largely have to be Josh Jacobs being that workhorse running back that he has, you know, that's the role he's used to and that he was playing with the Raiders. So he had 200 plus carries all five seasons. So we know he can be a workhorse running back. We know he can do that at least for 5 weeks, if not for the entire season. I know usually LaFleur likes to keep his running backs fresh and used to like work in the backup. And, you know, we saw that with Aaron Jones all the time, where maybe not giving as many carries as people wanted, but it was always kind of just trying to find that balance of keeping him fresh or using him like a workhorse. I do think they might just let Jacobs be more of a workhorse, and especially again now with this injury. So I'm expecting a heavy dose of him, and you know, I'm pleased by what I saw in the second half with him. I know first half, it wasn't not all his fault. I mean, he didn't have tons of opportunities to do a lot on the ground, but he was definitely struggling at halftime, and you know, there were kind of people concerned about it, but he definitely showed in the second half that like, he is still a good running back. He's still someone who can break off some big plays. So yeah, looking forward to, you know, hopefully a lot of Josh Jacobs. And if you can lead on the run game, if he can be the Josh Jacobs that, you know, led the league in rushing 2 years ago, yeah, we're going to have a decent shot to win one or two of these games coming up.
Tyler.
Yeah, I was going to bring up the run game. I watched the Colts Texans game today. They could not stop the run. It was quite bad. You know, it's obviously made a different situation with a loaded box. The defense I'm way more interested in because the Colts play kind of similarly to the Eagles with that mobile quarterback. The big difference is that Richardson is a little more erratic accuracy-wise, but he can absolutely throw it over the top. If you have not seen the highlight of his 60-yard bomb to Alec Pierce for a touchdown, holy smokes, man. It's a real shame they didn't win that one. But again, when you can't stop the run and your quarterback's erratic, that's going to happen. So I'm curious to see if the game plan is similar. Are they going to try and do a contain rush? Maybe the field conditions, they can get home a little more often. The Colts offensive line is getting a lot of credit nationally, but I'm not personally totally sold on it yet. I don't think it's bad by any means, but I'm interested in the pass rush and if they can contain the deep ball.
It's funny because it's almost like the Colts offense is like the B minus version of the Philadelphia Eagles offense, where like, again, you've got the mobile quarterback, but it's not quite where Jalen Hurts is already from a maturity standpoint. You've got Jonathan Taylor, phenomenal running back, and can do things, I think some things better than Saquon, but Saquon just has a lot more dynamic and pass catching and can do everything. And then you just don't have the receivers that Philly has either, nor do you have the tight end, you know, either in Dallas Goedert. So, you know, it's just almost like a B minus version of what Philly tries to do without as many pieces. So this defense just has to be better, I think, in week two than they were in week one. They have to learn some of the lessons. They're going to probably do a lot of contained stuff again with Anthony Richardson, just like they did with Jalen Hurts, but they're going to have to find a way to impact him to make sure that he's not winning with his legs, but also is not having the time to hit those 60 yarders down the field. Just needs to be better. And then you just cannot leave points on the field like they did last week, whether it's taking a point off the board, going for a 2-pointer and taking 2 points off the board, whether it's a 45-yard field goal missed by Braden Narveson, whatever it is, like getting in the red zone, first and goal from the 3-yard line, having to settle for a field goal. Like they just have to take advantage of those opportunities, because with no Jordan Love, those opportunities are probably going to be fewer and far between, and you have to take advantage of them when you get them. So cannot leave points on the board. I think those are my two big things.
I'm workshopping a nickname for Narveson because I keep hearing all the memes about Australians saying R-Nar, and that is going to be R. Narveson whenever he misses. That's just going to be in my head every time.
I will accept that. Hopefully we don't have to hear that very much, because hopefully he's not missing very much. But yeah, I think that was it. So Nathan, anything else you wanted to add? Any other final thoughts on anything?
No, I don't think so. I mean, talking about the Colts defense, no, we brought up, I don't remember who brought it up, but their run defense, yeah, is very poor. And I think going back to what I said about Jacobs and leaning on the run game, yeah, they were 25th out of, or this week, they were 25th out of 28 teams who have played so far in terms of rush EPA per play allowed. So I do think this is a good matchup if you're going to lean on the run a lot. The Colts defense is a pretty good matchup to be able to do that against. So yeah, I mean, I wanted to just bring that up because yeah, you mentioned it, but they were not good against the run today.
No, it's going to be a fun matchup. Even with Malik Willis at quarterback, there could be some chaos at the quarterback position on both sides of the ball. Both young quarterbacks who are extremely athletic and a little bit erratic, and probably Willis a lot more erratic than Anthony Richardson at this point, but still could be some potential chaos on both sides of the ball. Guys, this was insanely easy, by the way. This was awesome. Like just super, super awesome to talk with you guys for the first time. And it absolutely flew by for 45 minutes. But Tyler, tell us where we can find all of your work and plug anything you want to plug.
Yeah, just follow me at Tyler D. Brook on Twitter. I'm not going to call it X.
it's Twitter. It's Twitter.
Yeah. And then you can find my work at the 33rd team. I've been working there for a couple of weeks. It's a lot of fun, very refreshing to just talk about the league nationally, break it down from an analytical level. So really enjoying that. The resources they give us to do content there is insane. So please check that out. And I will say it's my favorite game every 4 years as a born and raised Hoosier that's a Packers fan. Packers Colts, I gotta love it. I've gotten to go twice in my lifetime, once at Lambeau, once at Lucas Oil. It's one of those games where I don't really care who wins, but at the same time, it's kind of a bad situation because someone's facing Owen Tombstone this year. So we'll see what happens. Yeah.
Nathan?
Yeah, and then I'm at Nathan Marzian, just my name on Twitter. And, you know, as Andy mentioned at the beginning, I do a lot of Bucks stuff, a lot of, you know, Packer stuff as well. But, yeah, tweeting about all my different sports teams, random sports stuff, just all my stuff pretty much on Twitter. I do have a couple other, you know, Buck sites I write for and do content for, but you can find that stuff on my Twitter at Nathan Marzian.
And make sure to follow both of them. They're both absolutely amazing. You will not be disappointed. At Nathan Marzian and at Tyler D. Brook. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Packaday Podcast. That is going to do it for us today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.